Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. As always, I'm Steve Haller. Andy Pregler and Christian Guzman are here with me. I'm going to stop trying to say join. How we doing, guys?
When's the last time you had a job in Syracuse for 311 days?
What did I miss?
No, that's how long Mark Coyle's tenure was at Syracuse.
I forgot about that. I forgot we're in the Coyle Bowl. Oh boy! Yes.
Oh, this is the dream job bowl. This is that. That's what
yes, it is. This is the dream job bowl. That's
the battle of the dream jobs. The guy who
the winner's trophy is just your hopes and dreams. So it will be nothing, but
winner gets Coyle as AD, right? That's just how it works, right?
Oh God! I know that I have my thoughts on John Wildax and AD, but somehow I think that Mark Coyle's, I mean, this is the crazy part. We should also probably mention this. If you somehow live under a rock and haven't heard, Syracuse is going to the Pinstripe Bowl on December 29th in New York City at Yankee Stadium. They will be playing the Minnesota Golden Gophers, who the athletic director at Minnesota is Mark Coyle, who was famously the athletic director that hired Dino Babers and then promptly left Syracuse after he said Syracuse was his dream job and he was ready to come back home to Syracuse. He then left less than a year later to go to Minnesota, his other dream job, and go back home and stay for a long time.
This is post the Marone dream job era too. So this is,
yes.
Yep. Syracuse has been the site of multiple dream jobs.
I feel like.
So something about those salt potatoes, man.
They do call us hallucinogenics in certain situations.
Good God.
Yeah. Gents, we talked about it a lot on the site this week. We talked about it a lot on the last couple of podcasts. But at the we are at the end of the Syracuse football regular season, and the Orange finished 7-5. I tweeted out about their schedule. They faced 9 bowl teams, 2 teams of which were playing in Championship Saturday. This was a gauntlet of a schedule, and they managed to go 7-5, which was what most people thought was the upper limits of their ceiling. And we now get essentially a home game as a bowl game in New York City in the Pinstripe Bowl. This was the best case scenario for the season. Am I wrong? Or I know that the 5 game losing streak is in there. There's these other things that people want to focus on. But ultimately, Christian, you nodded. If you're not watching us on Twitch, Christian nodded his head. This was the best case scenario for the team, was it not?
I think you could make a case that the ceiling could have been up by a win or two if certain injuries didn't happen on this team, namely Chris Elmore, Stephon Thompson, Terry Lockett. If injuries like that didn't happen, Garrett Williams also at the end of the season, although by the time he got injured, most of those teams probably would have beaten Syracuse anyway. If those key injuries didn't happen, you could have made a good argument, and I wouldn't necessarily disagree at first glance to bump up the win ceiling by a couple. But at the beginning of the season, this is what we probably should have expected. Now, if you want to revise it at the end of the season and say, yeah, injuries could have, if injuries didn't happen,
hold on, folks. I think we're having some technical difficulties on the Discord side. Let me see if I can figure out what's going on here.
It got into with somebody who was basically talking about how, like, 7-5 is a mediocre program. Like, we need to start this. I pulled the Steve and went, do you realize how high of a ceiling mediocre is for the Syracuse team since the year 2000? Because let me tell you,
even prior
mediocre
to that.
Right now is basically the is the ceiling for the Orange. There is no reason we should be anything more than mediocre. Us being mediocre is us overachieving. And Steve, you're back here.
Yes.
Great. Tell us, I know that I can't, this is your opinion, and your opinion is correct. But, like, this is Dino Babers' second winning season, his second bowl, which now ties him for the most bowls in the post-Pasqualoni era.
Yeah, which is mildly insane. It's been a ride since 2004. The glories of the Champs Sports Bowl under Paul Pasqualoni seem to be fresh in the minds of many people around here for some reason. The tail end of the Pasqualoni era was mired in mediocrity. We've had mediocrity since. We at this point have no reason to expect more than mediocrity outside of a fluke 10-3 season that could have been just as easy a 6-4 season. Well, that would have required us to not play a couple games, but you get my point. Yes. The math is not my strong point. Any of the situations in and around what Syracuse has been for these past 20 years needs to get a reset and kind of culminate in just make a damn bowl game, because we haven't been mediocre. Mediocre is well above where we've been punching.
And the unfortunate thing is that 10-3 season kind of skewed a lot of fans' perceptions just because so many things went right for that team in that season. You had a bunch of senior leadership, a healthy team, consistency, and like all of that coming together. Just the amount of like veterans on that team and the health of that team is really what pushed that that particular season to the heights that it became.
It's the football equivalent. That 10-3 season is the football equivalent of all the stupid postseason runs we've had since 2013 in basketball. We've literally been doing the same thing in both sports.
You know what that team is? It's the 2019 Washington Nationals without Juan Soto.
Huh.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll track you there. Huh.
They,
What do you think, actually, on that 2018 team, what do you think the wins against replacement were for Coda Martin and, God, what was the other tackle? Not Cody Conway.
Coda Martin he's on an NFL roster. Like, I think that's like, when was, like, Justin Pugh and him are playing on the same team?
Yeah,
is he still with them?
He's showing up on the Cardinals page.
Mm-hmm. How about that?
Like, I don't think fans realize just how good that 2018 team was on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, they remember Dungy, and they remember Dungy being amazing. But the reason Dungy was amazing was because that offensive line legitimately hung with everyone. Like, I remember that Clemson game in Clemson. That Clemson defensive front was stacked with first and second round players, and the Syracuse offensive line held their own, and not even in we gave it a good effort and got worn down thing. No. They won the battle in the trenches 51% of the time. Just absolutely insane how good that team was up front, and a lot of it was due to the individual talent there. On that note, I also got into, in these Twitter arguments that I should never engage in, I said the statement that looking at this team and the 5-1-5 end to the season and saying that it was a failure and we missed expectations is equivalent to saying that a Sweet 16 run for a 500 basketball team makes it a good season. Was I being purposefully obtuse? Maybe.
Are you inaccurate?
Right. Yeah. Like, so much of this season, like, Steve, we've kind of talked about this before, but, like, again, you reorder this schedule in any other way, and 7-5 feels a lot better. But like when you were doing the predictions at the beginning of the season, and you and I were tasked on being a bit more optimistic, there was no way at looking at that stretch of it being anything other than where the Syracuse season went to die.
Unless you were our dogs or Christian's cat, there was no chance in hell you were thinking they were making it out of that with more than one win. Like, that was a murderer's row designed to eat up this team. And it did. And it was going to. And they still had a good... Like, they're 7-5. When is the last time we saw 7-5 outside of the spike? It's been a while.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is, Christian, I think this is something that's going to be really interesting. And we're going to talk about this all offseason. No Syracuse coach since Doug Marrone... actually, I don't even know if Marrone did it, has had back-to-back bowl seasons for Syracuse since Coach P. Because I think Marrone losing, yeah, losing bowl 5-7, bowl left. Yeah. So no coach has had back-to-back bowl seasons at Syracuse since Coach P, which, as we've established at the top of this segment, long-ass time ago. We've seen Dino have the peak and then fail to meet the peak. But that failure was a 5-7 season. And then the pandemic happened, which I think for a lot of programs that are in Syracuse's position was basically a reset in the worst way possible. Are we in a situation where Dino Babers making a bowl game next season? Obviously, that's going to be the fans' expectation. That is going to be what the administration says is the expectation. But realistically, like, I looked at the schedule, it's not the worst schedule. It's not the best schedule.
It's a schedule.
It's better than this year's schedule.
Yeah, like, there's a path for 6 wins. I'm just concerned about a lot of the things that you brought up earlier about what derailed this season. There are certain players that if they get injured, the entire thing goes to shit. And that's not really changing next year.
And it doesn't help that the fact that Syracuse is now faced with the problem that faced the 2018 team was that all those veteran leaders that helped you get to this point are now leaving. Like, Michael Jones is definitely gone. Garrett Williams is gone. Chris Elmore is gone. Your offensive line, what's left of it, is gone, save for Chris Bleich.
And Kalen Ellis.
Like, Sean Tucker may or may not be gone. Like, there's a lot of pieces and important pieces.
Courtney Jackson entered the transfer portal.
Courtney Jackson entered the transfer portal. Like, there's a lot of pieces there that you're going to have to replace. And that's in large part what led to the 5-7 season in 2019. It's that it's hard to reload a team, especially when you recruit like Syracuse does. And you have to replace a lot of veteran leadership that Syracuse had to.
So, Steve, in that 2018 bowl game, very famously, West Virginia had half of its team opt out of the bowl game, and Syracuse,
including their starting quarterback.
Yep, Will Grier. And Syracuse opted to go with what essentially was a full strength 22. Yeah.
Not only a full strength 22, that was also buoyed by the last era of transfers who had to sit out a year. So remember, that game was also the first games for Abdul Adams and Tristan Jackson.
Right.
Yes.
And they had 3 touchdowns combined, those 3.
Yeah. So I was laughing because I heard Will Grier and all I could think of was Will Grigg. But
because he's on fire.
He is always on fire. Yeah, that I think we might see some of the same kind of thing happen, though.
That was what I was going to ask you, Steve. Like, what do you think we see / what would you rather see?
Does it make sense for anyone who's got a potential NFL contract to play in this game? No, at all.
No.
Like, I fully expect Matthew Bergeron and Mikel and Tucker I to can, not
I
sit.
I can see Mikkel opting to play in the game.
Yeah.
But I don't see that incentive for Bergeron and Tucker.
Are you seeing Mikkel as a combine and check guy, or like play himself into a higher spot type guy or type situation?
I'm seeing him as the guy who, you know, claims himself, and is rightfully so, the leader of this defense and probably the locker room leader of this team.
And that is so true. And Bergeron's also a captain.
Yeah, Bergeron is also a captain, so you might be able to make a case for Bergeron, although I see it less so, because we've seen so much of Mikhail's leadership. I mean, you all read the Players Tribune article probably before the Clemson game. Like, there's a lot of leadership elements in Mikkel that I think his natural football drive won't want him to miss this game, even if it could, you know, hurt draft stock.
Right. No, I could see that. On the flip side, I would doubt that Minnesota's running back is playing either. So that helps. Well,
is he even?
I think he's draft eligible, isn't he?
Let's check before we say for certain.
Well, I was going to say, like, what you guys were talking about with Mikkel is actually really interesting, because I do think that that's a part of this whole bowl game equation. Part of it is that it is a reward for players on a season, for Syracuse at least, a season where expectations were met / exceeded. And this is a reward. It's an extra day. It's a trip to New York City. For a lot of these guys, it's some sort of a homecoming when you factor in the New York area and New Jersey area ties. They want to play in front of their families. That being said, I think that there's a ton of evidence that certain players and certain position groups should be rotated heavily, because we now have what essentially amounts to 3 extra weeks of practice for this team. And obviously certain guys are hurt. Other guys are now stepping into the ones and the twos that weren't on the two deep at the beginning of the season. I'm curious from both of you, and we can start with Steve, who would you like to see either take a step away and like not necessarily play in the bowl game, or who would you like to see step up and say, I would like to see this player get some rope because of either one, I think that they're promising, or two, this position group in general needs to start seeing some bodies step forward going into next year.
Well, you know, I know that was a leading question because you know the group I'm going to talk about.
The question is, do you have a player for that group?
In all honesty, it's Enrique Cruz. Like, he's got the most potential for the group. He's also most likely to slot in when Bergeron sits out inevitably. I would personally like to see some of the young interior guards and center options, not named Iloa or Tisdale's not young, but like guys that
Darius Tisdale is the opposite definition of young,
right? Like, not the guys that we know what we're going to get with them. Like, we've seen enough Iloa. In all honesty, we've probably seen enough Cruz, but he's going to be a starting tackle next year, so he needs reps. Guys like Joe Cruz, guys like Jacob Bradford, a little bit more from them would be great. I don't know. And who the hell knows? Like, do we just play without a defensive line so that somebody might be healthy for the start of the 23 season?
Well, I mean, one of your ends is already injured for the year. That's Dennis Hawkes, so
yep.
You can't see him. Everyone else on the line is injured, so.
So we're just going to line up the rest of the like the backup linebackers at D-line and call it a day?
Yeah.
Okay, that'll work against a really good running attack.
I mean, I did look it up. I'm not sure if you did also, Steve, Muhammad Ibrahim, who is Minnesota's running back, 4th in the NCAA in rushing yards, first team all Big Ten. He's a 6th-year senior.
Yeah, and he holds every record at Minnesota, so it's not like he's playing for anything either.
No. So I don't think he'll play, because that's definitely a guy who could have an NFL future, especially with the numbers he put up this season.
Yeah.
Now, that was largely helped because Minnesota had three offensive linemen selected to all Big Ten teams as well. Minor details. Minor details.
Mm-hmm. So, again, we're back to the offensive lineman matter in the grand scheme of things here.
Shocker.
We need to work on the big guys up front to protect the little guys behind them. It's just because, basic.
Because concept. We are returning to Yankee Stadium. That is very hashtag brand of this podcast.
Oh, damn it. I should have worn the Yankees hat.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be great to see you all come down to my neck of the woods for this very stupid and silly game that is also sponsored by Bad Boy Mowers for some reason. That doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Remember when Bad Boy Mowers used to sponsor the Gasparilla Bowl and that was like the big joke among us? How the turns table.
Yes. absolutely. And yeah, it's so fitting that a return to a bowl is in the pinstripe. Like nobody's singing the praises of the pinstripe like it's some holy bowl to go to. It's a bowl.
There was somebody that tweeted out seriously that players who were maybe thinking about transferring would enter the portal because this bowl game was such a letdown. Like these players are actively weighing the difference between the Sun Bowl and the Pinstripe Bowl and the Tax Slayer Bowl and the Military Bowl as if there's like a fundamental difference to them over any of these bowl games that aren't the playoff.
That only applies if you are Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, Michigan, Clemson, etc., etc.
I did not hear you say Syracuse in there, so I'm going to assume that we do not apply to this situation.
You would be correct.
Perfect.
The Stephen Godfrey hit the nail on the head. The playoff has ruined the collective way that the general public perceives college football. Just like everybody assumes that you, and like the playoff expanding is just going to make it so much worse. Like, how many coaches are going to get a Mel Tucker deal because they got into the playoff as a 10 seed and played a Clemson team that is sleepwalking through the game close, and they almost advanced in the playoff to the Final Four or some shit? I have zero faith in the playoff doing anything except making the richer teams even more rich.
Well, maybe then people would stop asking why Clemson rushes the field after every win.
Yeah.
Man. So, you know who else loves college football traditions? That was a really bad segue, but we're talking about home field apparel. Our friends and makers of the finest purveyors of vintage collegiate apparel that you can find on the interwebs this side of college football. They have joggers, they have t-shirts, they have hoodies, they have crew neck sweaters, pretty much anything cozy and comfy with a vintage mascot on it, they have it. You should go check them out. Use promo code NUNES, N-U-N-E-S, for 10% off your first order at homefieldapparel.com. They are currently running their 12 days of home field promotion, where they're going to be running a daily promotion up until Christmas, which is just great. So keep an eye out on their social media accounts, keep an eye out on their website for all the latest deals if you're looking to get that last-minute Christmas shopping in. Gentlemen, we received an early Christmas present from a Syracuse athletics team. The Syracuse men's soccer team is headed back to the College Cup, a.k.a. the NCAA Men's Final Four, for the second time in program history, the second time under Coach Mack. The last time was 2015, where they lost to Clemson on penalties.
So technically, they did not lose to Clemson. They drew Clemson, and Clemson advanced on penalties.
Oh, jeez.
There we go. Yes. I mean, listen, for those of you who might be degenerate enough to make bets on college soccer, these are very important distinctions.
Are we going to be betting lines for this?
Absolutely. Yeah. No reputable sports book should be making bets on college soccer.
Especially this iteration of the College Cup, where Syracuse is the 3 seed, which, okay, that makes sense. And it's the highest rating seed. The next highest is the 12 seed in
UNC Greensboro.
Greensboro. I wanted to make sure I had the right UNC.
Yeah.
And then Creighton and Pitt, who are unseeded. So KS has reigned supreme this year in college soccer, and I think SU may be the benefactor at this point.
Although if we are going by basketball seeding, a one seed did make the Final Four.
That is true. That is true. Yes. But this is, I wrote it out to somebody. I was like, this is kind of the equivalent of like a one seed, a four seed, and then like two 10 seeds making it.
So basically that NCAA tournament where Butler and UConn made the Final Four. I mean, that championship game.
Yep. Yeah, that would be a quick, effectively it.
Yeah.
And we're hoping that Syracuse can take advantage of this.
Well, gentlemen, how did Syracuse get there? They played yet another stress-inducing game, this time against a Vermont team that tied Syracuse when the Orange went up to Burlington earlier in the season. The revenge tour continued on. They won this one 2-1. Syracuse went up early 1-0, gave up an equalizer, and then scored in the second half to make it 2-1. I missed the opening goal, which we'll talk about in a hot second, because absolutely insane. But the rest of the game kind of played out the way that Syracuse likes to play these games. Vermont was... obviously, they got a goal and they were a bit dangerous. But unlike actually the Cornell game, which again, I think was muddied up literally because of the weather, Syracuse was really controlling the midfield. Vermont wasn't really able to make a ton of incisive passes past the lines. They weren't able to do a ton consistently in pressuring the Syracuse back four in a way that made you felt like they got beat consistently. But they let Vermont have a good deal of the ball and then just opted to counter them like hell. And there were many times, especially once the game opened up, once Vermont really had to chase it, where I thought this game could have probably ended 4-1 Syracuse. Like, there were two very easily missed goals in the last few minutes. And if you start doing the expected goal, obviously there's no expected goals for college soccer, but like the expected goals math on that game, I think would show Syracuse probably had a lot more scoring opportunities that they didn't convert on than Vermont did the other way.
They did.
Well, I think, yeah, and I think a trademark of this Syracuse team has been, especially on the defensive end, is that it's very hard to get the ball inside Syracuse's 18-yard box. Like,
it really is.
Whether it's midfield pressure or the back three, you have to do something. You either have to rain down a ton of constant pressure or have a moment of individual magic to get the ball inside the penalty box in the first place.
Yeah.
And in the college game, especially in this era of the college game, there aren't going to be too many players who can take advantage of space outside the 18.
But there was in this game, and not for Syracuse.
Yes.
Because I do want to talk about Vermont's goal, because holy, I don't know what it looked like on film, but that thing was a wonder strike.
Remember the Penn game? Remember the Penn game where every goal was just kind of the jammiest crap in front of the box?
Yep.
This was the complete opposite. All three goals were incredible.
Yep. So, yeah, I guess, Andy, you said we'd go back to it. Do you want to recap let's start off, because before the opener, Kirk Kalov had another opportunity. So if anyone didn't know, anyone who's been following, Kirk Kalov actually started on the right for Noah Singleman, who's the normal right back or right wing back for the side. What they ended up doing was pushing the attack right off the front foot. I mean, that in itself, switching Singleman for Kalov, is a purely offensive substitution. And it came off. Like, they were, as she was in control from the get-go, and in the, like, probably in the first 4 minutes, they had a great chance from Kalov right off the six, and he kind of just put it wide of the post. So the offensive move paid off in the roster shift.
Yeah, that lone decision turned Syracuse's formation from a half four back at sometimes five back to a complete three back.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that back line of Olegunye, Curdy, and Salim, like, Abdi had probably one of the better games I've watched him play.
Yeah,
And overall, that back three, and this is without Booster Schoberg, who played most of the season at the middle of that, this back three has kind of morphed into they can't even bring Booster back into the lineup because they're playing so well together.
Which I didn't think I'd say.
No. And, you know, beginning of the year, like, Olu was a little shaky, and then Abdi coming off of the injury, and, you know, Curdy had his moments, and then by the end here, once Booster went out, the three of them have kind of locked it right down. So Booster's kind of been resorted back to coming in late in the game to close it out as a fourth center back.
Emergency DM.
Yeah. Which I do want to shout out Anthony Sinclair because he had another fine game, kind of cleaning trouble up at the back. Mm-hmm. But now that we've buried the lead, Olympico? Yeah. Olympico. So, Pregler, would you like the honors of describing what went down? Are you alive?
I mean, I would like to, but my tell. Internet is being dumb again.
Wonderful.
So, for those that do not know, an Olympico is when you score off of a corner kick, but you literally, it is the corner taker who scores the goal. Yeah. And it is incredibly hard. There's a little bit of luck involved in these, but they're also, it's just basically you need to hit that four post with enough curl that the goalkeeper literally has no play except to just throw his hands up and maybe touch it because you put enough curl on the ball that they're tracking it out in front as well as to the far post. And I did not know that anyone on Syracuse had that much skill to do it, hence the luck part, but it was beautiful. It's also why I think that you've seen this in the World Cup a bit. Obviously the U.S. men's national team, talk about them later in a side tangent. Even though they weren't even if it's not great at corner kicks, getting corner kicks is still good because it means you get a free shot to just shove the ball into the 18-yard box. And this is what happens. And this is why you will always take a corner kick above anything else is like, hey, listen, this is an opportunity to do something stupid. And the stupid worked in Syracuse's favor this time.
Yep.
And again, like, it was one of those things where I think up until the Olympico, Syracuse didn't really have any opportunities that you were like, oh man, they should really be up in this one. But it was deserved in the fact that Syracuse was definitively kind of bossing the field of play and they were the better side, even if that goal didn't come in a way that, you know, was a direct result of that dominance.
I saw something though, because this corner that they scored off of came directly off of a corner before it where they were kind of lined up in a traditional, you know, more of a traditional set piece from the corner. Mm-hmm. And something between that and the second corner happened, and they crowded the keeper and were playing on the line, and I think just went for it.
It's what Syracuse does if the ball was out swinging from the corner. So if the
they were both in swingers. The first one, what's that?
No, it was Kalov. Kalov took both, right?
Yeah, and they were both from the same side.
No, I thought one was from the left and the.
Oh, okay. Right. Is that what happened?
Yeah,
okay.
That's what Syracuse does. If yes. It's an outswinging ball, basically, if you imagine Kalov, a right-footed player, he approaches the ball from the right side, the ball is going to come starting at the end line and then dipping towards the D. And so it makes more sense for the players to stay in the box. And when it's on the opposite side, where Kalov scored the Olympico goal from, the ball starts mainly on the outside and then curves towards the goal. And that's what Syracuse has done in all its corners. If it's an in-swinging ball, they crowd the keeper. If it's an out-swinging ball, they start on the edge of the D.
Well, and it worked out.
Yeah.
And it was pretty. And this is, mind you, if anyone who wasn't up there didn't know, the winds were like...
That definitely had an effect, yeah.
Just under gale force. Like, it was impressive. And they were changing direction rapidly. There were numerous points where like a ball got lifted up into the air and it literally just stopped. And dropped. Like there was no, like there was one point where the Vermont keeper cleared it and the ball just went up and it just dropped outside the 18. And I was like, oh, okay, that's new. physics don't work that way, but okay, we'll go with it. But yeah, I mean, that into the Vermont answer itself was, I mean, everybody in the stadium was like, no, nobody's stopping that. Like, it was a absolute knuckling rocket from like probably 30 out.
Yeah.
And yeah, like flat line kind of had a little rise on it. And, you know, Sheely was caught wrong footed and I don't think anybody saw the shot coming.
I thought the way that it flew, I thought it took a deflection, but on the replays, no, that was a pure shot.
Yeah.
And I don't think even Chidi was wrong for that. I think it was just that it was so perfectly placed in the corner that there was just no way he was going to get to that.
So unexpected and put where it needed to be.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, the broadcast literally thought it was deflected as well. And then they watched the replay and they were a bit astounded that it wasn't deflected. But that's how things went into half. Was that goal right before?
No.
Oh, I thought that goal was right before half.
Levante's was right before half.
Okay, there we go. So it went into half tie up with Syracuse up 2-1.
Yep, that was the only. All the scoring was in the first half.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
We need to talk about that goal because
he just keeps doing this. Like he can't keep getting away with this, but he keeps getting away with this.
Honestly, this is just Levante being a good striker, good attacking positioning, and good finishing. This goal was all Nathan Opoku.
Yes, it was.
Yes.
This goal, I tweeted this out. This is that goal is one of the reasons why Nathan Opoku is a high candidate to get a Generation Adidas contract.
Yeah, if Opoku is here next year, it's because he turned down a Gen Adidas contract. Like, he's going to be gone. His dancing through the 6-yard box and laying it off, like having the foresight to lay it off to Chris Wondolowski or. it was a very Wando goal.
Yes, yeah, it was.
And not the 2014 Wando, the like actual Chris Wondolowski in MLS. Like he's always in the spot he needs to be.
2014 Wando ended up on the roster,
right? Like
mm-hmm.
Johnson was just exactly where he needed to be, and Opoku found him, and that was, you know, but like you said, the hold up play and what Opoku did was what made that.
And it's hard to find a striker that can do both,
right?
Because usually you have a striker who is a hold-up play, but then he's a target man because of that strength.
Mm-hmm.
And the other striker who has the dribbling skills don't necessarily have the same strength to be a hold-up player. Opoku not only has the hold-up strength, but he's got the dribbling as well and the passing as well to play those roles, and which makes him very attractive at the next level.
Yeah. Yeah, being that full package striker definitely will come in quite handy for him, and he's still quite young. I want to say he's a true sophomore.
Yeah, I believe he is a true sophomore. That's why he can be a Generation Adidas candidate.
So yeah, all in all, I mean the second half was kind of, you know, standard nervy, was open for a while, and then Syracuse kept like taking the foot back off a little and getting pressured by Vermont. And then we had a couple of breakouts that really could have put it away, including was Opoku sending one into the American equivalent of Rose Ed. He leaned back a little too hard and couldn't put it on frame.
That was one that just really got me because he did it again for the second time. He beat everybody. He did everything right.
He was trying to be cute.
Yeah.
And he was trying to be cute and go for the pretty finesse shot into the top corner.
Mm-hmm.
But you put a little bit too much power when you press L1 in circle.
Yep. yep. So yeah, and then, you know, as time expired, Cameron Holbrook had a chance that skittered wide.
That one whistled by the right post.
Yeah. So all in all, a hell of a win for the Cuse, and, you know, great to see them go back to the College Cup for the second time. Unfortunately, I don't have enough Noons bucks to head down to Cary this Friday. However, I'll be watching it, and probably since I'll be sitting here at home live tweeting it, it's very tough to do that from the stadium when you're trying to actually follow the game.
Again, also in Gale Force wins.
Yeah, because, well, you know, the press box for soccer is non-existent, so I was in the front row of the bleachers because there was that many people on the hill. It was, by the time I got there, it was already packed, packed to capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So
Again, yeah. they keep showing the hill on the TV broadcast, and the students looked like they were having a good time in not a great weather situation.
And no. I do want to give a little preview on this next game for Syracuse, though.
Yeah.
Because Syracuse Creighton, it's a stylistic difference matchup. Because, well, like we said, Syracuse is a defensive team. You've seen that this postseason if you've been following along with the defense. We've talked about it already, how good of a defense this is. Syracuse coming into the Final Four games is fourth in the NCAA in teams' goals against average. Creighton is the number two scoring team, in the entire NCAA at 2.7 goals per game, and they have the NCAA leading goal scorer on their team.
Yep.
For context, Levante Johnson has, 10 goals now on the season? 9-10 goals?
Yeah, that was 10, because he and Opoku both had 9.
Mm-hmm. Creighton has a player named Duncan McGuire who has 22.
Right. That's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So Creighton is effectively kicking and screaming, give the ball to McGuire instead of the Italians and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not great, but we'll see. I know Syracuse is, I was trying to figure out, what Syracuse's, scoring average was, so that, yeah, they've scored 43 on the year. Creighton has scored 63 on the year. That's pretty much a goal a game better.
Yeah, Syracuse is 38th in the NCAA with a 1.87 per game, and Creighton is pretty much almost a goal per game.
Yeah, we're gonna get tested.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, Creighton, what? Their three NCAA tournament games were 3-2, 3-2, 3-0.
Yeah, and one of them was against Kentucky.
Right.
Which was the number one team, the number one seed.
And then the last game was against Duke, who was the number 7 seed.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. When you hear Creighton, you think of someone we might play in basketball in November. And not really expect, you know, much like Akron. When you see Akron playing us in football, it's very different than Akron playing us in soccer. And yes, I know I was there when we lost to Akron.
Yeah.
You had to bring up that team. Well, you also had to bring up men's basketball. And so in the last 10 minutes here, we should probably talk about men's basketball.
Anyone who's watching on the feed can see how excited all three of our faces look right now.
Mm-hmm.
They went 1-1 this week. They beat a not great Notre Dame team. For reference, Notre Dame in KenPom is right next to the Richmond team that Syracuse beat in Brooklyn and the Colgate team that Syracuse lost to at the Dome. They beat Notre Dame by 1 point in South Bend. But in the game against a team that is ranked and pretty good, the Orange got the doors blown off of them. I don't really know if there's anything to take out of this week that we didn't already know, but Christian looks like he's ready to say something.
At least we're not Louisville.
That is the takeaway of the weekend.
That's been the takeaway of this basketball season.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, it doesn't matter how far we can, how far down we go. It doesn't matter how bad we are. We will not be Louisville. I guess the biggest thing that I got
I just saw today's Louisville score. Yeah. I hadn't seen today's Louisville score. 80-53 against Miami. Not great anywhere around here. No, yeah, let's not be Louisville.
Louisville has broken the 70-point barrier once this season.
Oh, okay. Cool. You're
not
supposed
a good
to
time
score
to be a Cardinal.
And for other reference, this is not a Virginia team coached by Tony Bennett that is not scoring and also playing good defense. This is just a team that can't do either.
Yeah.
They've given up at least 70 points in all but 2 regular season games.
Seems fine.
Syracuse is going to get a lot right by playing Louisville.
No, they're going to get nothing out of it. It's going to be the equivalent of playing an FBS school in football.
Yeah, that's actually more accurate. Yeah.
Only one game, unfortunately, and it's at the KFC Yum Center.
Something weird's going to happen in that game. I'm not ready. I'm not mentally ready.
It's January 3rd. It's the first game after the New Year's.
You know, since
it just all magically melts together.
You know, since we're saying this all, that we're probably going to find a way to lose that game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Syracuse going to Syracuse.
Well, especially
how quickly we all said yes.
Yeah. There's no hesitation. Like, yeah, we think we should win it. We're going to lose. It's fine.
100%. Judah Mintz is the best player on the Orange. That's been validated. Let me rephrase. Judah Mintz is the best player who is consistently getting the ball in his hands.
Hopefully that changes, please.
One yes. would think.
Is anyone listening?
Jesse Edwards needs more touches. We talked about it. If you haven't listened to last week's podcast where Kevin basically unloaded his frustrations on the basketball team in the podcast, I would highly recommend listening to that. But this really did feel like a tale of two games where they tried to play Illinois the way that the players want to play, and then they played Notre Dame the way that we all want Syracuse to play, and they beat Notre Dame and they lost to Illinois by a lot. This team is going to be so frustrating to watch, guys.
I gave you that impression.
Yeah.
Will the games we've played so far continue to be?
Literally all of them?
I'm not going to lie. I only watched the Notre Dame highlights because that game was on after the US-Netherlands game, and we were at the bar, and I literally just told the bartender who was like, I'll put the game on for you. I literally told him I can't handle any more pain.
So I didn't see the end of it. I thought they were going to lose because when I left here, it was looking like they were very much going to lose to get up to the hill to cover the soccer game, which is why I showed up at the soccer game so late, because I was trying to watch this because, well.
Why? Yeah.
Well, it's
unlike me, you didn't have to write something for this game.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Hindsight.
Confession. I didn't watch the US Netherlands game because I had to have the strength to watch the Syracuse game.
Well, in retrospect,
Since we're talking World Cup, shout out to Kamal Miller and Tejan Buchanan, who did get Canada got knocked out in the group stages. Those ended earlier this week after our last pod. It wasn't a phenomenal showing by Canada on any accounts, but it was a team that hadn't made the cup since 1986, maybe.
And Tejan Buchanan is officially in the record books as the first men's assist in Canadian World Cup history on Alphonso Davies's goal, which was the first goal.
And it looks like my internet has decided to break itself once again. I'll see if these guys come back soon, but if not, we'll wrap it up here shortly. I think that is going to be it. So, yeah, thank you guys all for listening. Feel free to like, subscribe, get a hold of us for anything you need on the site, noonsmagician.com. And I guess like, follow, leave us a review to help expand the Ottoman Empire. And... Go Orange. Go Orange.